This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA, it's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
Welcome to the GSMC Sports Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, as always, Jeff Malinoff, and boy, oh boy, do we have some huge news regarding the NFL as a new rule change is going to shake the very foundational league. I don't think the league will be the same, to be completely honest. I think this is a huge, huge rule change. I think you know what I'm talking about. We'll talk about that in a second. We're also going to be talking about Harden versus Giannis, the two MVP candidates. It seems like those are the two front runners for the MVP this season, and how they do against one another. We'll talk about that. And also, we'll be talking about other things regarding basketball and probably some baseball stuff too. And anything else that needs to be talked about, we will talk about. So, first things first. The NFL rule change that's shaking the very foundation of this league. I think it's pretty monumental. I think everyone else assumes it's monumental as well. But let's talk about it. As the official ruling for the rule, I guess this is maybe, this may not be verbatim, but this is just how many people are describing it. Coaches will now have the opportunity to challenge pass interference calls or non-calls outside of 2 minutes of each half, while the booth would automatically review any close calls inside of 2 minutes. So basically, what that's saying is penalties, pass interference, and no calls will now be reviewed and could very well change the impact of every game. It will change the impact of every game. And of course, this all kind of started with the no call pass interference in the NFC Championship game between the LA Rams and the New Orleans Saints. That obvious no call really cost them the game. Well, yeah, it just basically that's just the sole reason people say. But I like this and don't like this at the same time. Because one, yes, they're gonna reverse calls that were obvious no calls or obvious pass interference calls and change them to the correct calling that we all see on the television screen and even in the stands. And so with that being said, it's also probably going to affect, well, maybe not affect, but it's probably going to make the games a lot longer. Because I think, well, obviously, there's only a few challenges you can do, but inside of 2 minutes, that's the booth's time to review it. So, will the booth have opportunities to review every single no call or every single controversial penalty that's happened? I don't think that's what this means, but overall, I'm thinking more along the lines of just like, what's the outcome? Like, how often is there going to be these no calls or bad reviews throughout this entire season, while everyone's like, oh, okay, now this rule is getting a little out of hand. I think that's what it might lead to is like this is getting out of hand about how consistently there's a review or anything of that nature. But I just honestly think this rule is also good because now we can kind of move on from, oh, why are the refs screwing over at this team and not this team, and the Patriots have all the refs on their side, blah, 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 blah. But I don't think they'll ever kind of go away. I think it's more along the lines of just maybe getting it off the back. Maybe not getting it off the back, strong word. Maybe just getting the fan base and players off the back of referees in more cases than not. And, you know, overall, I'm not sure how this is going to go. I'm not sure how this is going to turn out. I'm not sure how this is going to play out through this season. So it's going to be very interesting to see how, like, I'm going to say the first 5 weeks are basically going to be the quote-unquote trial run, if you will, when it comes down to how this new rule is going to go. Obviously, this rule is going to change a lot of things, and it's going to be interesting, to say the least, how the referees are going to play this out as well, and how they're going to make calls, and if they're going to be more stingy, more strict about some calls, or something of that nature. But it's really hard to tell how this is all going to go down, because obviously this is one of those things in where where it's up to the referees to make the right calls, but then there's going to be a lot of doubt in the mind of one team or the other, obviously, and there's going to be maybe more challenges in game. Maybe all four challenges will be used in games. Then usually there's only one or two challenges made by the coaches challenge, but you know, since they both have two, I have a feeling that both the teams are going to use both their challenges. And I think that's what is going to happen. I think, you know, they always have these random history notes and all this stuff. It's going to be like the most challenges ever made by coaches in one season combined. I think this is the year. This is going to be the year that happens or whatnot or something of that nature. But I don't know. It just seems that they said they got it right. There's a quote saying they got it right. And with that being said, we really don't know if they got it right or not. We really don't know if this is what they're actually, if this actually is right or not. I feel like this should be a more trial and error thing, not an official rule that should stick, because this might not lead to what everyone thinks it's going to lead to. This might lead to more problems than anything else, just because of the frequency of challenges and no calls, and then you can reverse challenges that people think, oh, they shouldn't have challenged in the first place, and there's going to be more, maybe possibly more controversies than anything else. But again, that might not be it. There might be some kinks that need to be worked out, but overall this might be the thing that we all needed to get over these controversial calls. You know, it is interesting, to say the least, how this is all going to play out, like I said before. And I don't know. I just feel like overall, this is, well, monumental. I think this is obviously monumental. And it's going to be interesting. Basically, I'm looking forward to seeing the preseason, seeing how everything goes there. And also just how this whole season is just going to be very interesting, to say the least. I'm looking forward to seeing what the controversies are going to be, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of controversies, like I said before, a lot of doubts in how this is all going to go down. And people think this is the best move. And it's like, yeah, it seems like it's going to be a very interesting move, to say the least. It seems like it's going to be more of a positive than a negative. But you know, sometimes objects in the mirror are closer than they appear, and sometimes it's not as good as everyone says it is, because There are going to be these things where you're looking at it and going, okay, was that the right move to challenge that or whatnot, and all this other and all these other aspects. So a definite game changer, to say the least. But you know, let's look back about previous calls, not just the NFC Championship game. I mean, there's been calls, countless calls that are considered pass interference calls that could have changed multiple games. The 1994 NFC Championship game is one that comes to mind. Deion Sanders supposed controversial pass interference, no call there against Michael Irving. And, of course, the first ever Hail Mary. For those who don't remember, it was a Roger Staubach of the Cowboys threw a deep pass for the Hail Mary. And I forget who the wide receiver was, but he blatantly pushed off of the Vikings corner or safety, whoever it was, and scored the touchdown. And if that was reviewed, that obviously would have changed. That would have been reversed, and the Vikings would have won that game, and the Hail Mary would never really have been a thing, maybe. Well, maybe not called the Hail Mary, because after the game, Roger Staubach said, "I just threw up a Hail Mary." That's exactly what he said. Or, you know, he threw up and said a Hail Mary. Something of that nature. But it's one of those things, you're looking at it and going, if this, obviously there was no reviews back then either, back in the 70s with Roger Staubach, but just thinking about notable missed pass interference calls, obviously it could definitely, they obviously could have changed a lot of regular season games as well, and could definitely change records of some teams. As well as just like, just in general of like how many games could have been won and lost due to this review rule if it was around a year or two ago or 3 or 4 years ago. Like a team that went 11-5 thanks to a pass interference call could go to 10-6 and miss the playoffs potentially. Like it's one of those things, you're looking at it like that and going, well, that's what's going to happen this year. A lot of wins might be taken away, and a lot of wins might be gained in this situation. So, with that being said, I mean, it's very interesting to see what the outcomes of this will be. And basically, going into this next season, corners are going to have to change their game plans, I feel like. Or corners got to be a little more careful than usual. And safety's got to be a little more careful. Defenses just got to be more and more careful than usual. And it was started with the quarterbacks and the roughing the passer calls that have been absolutely ridiculous. Like the one in the, I believe it was the AFC Championship game this year, where Peyton Manning got hit in the shoulder pad just a little bit. And they called that roughing the passer. Another absolutely ridiculous call, in my opinion. Another ridiculous call. Just there's been multiple ridiculous quarterback roughing the passer calls, which I feel like should be reviewed as well, to be completely honest with you. Because that is, when next to pass interference, that is one of the most blown calls in, or just personal foul, unnecessary roughness calls are also one of those things you're looking at it and going, yeah, that's not the right call. So maybe this will lead to future challenges for other calls as well, not just pass interference. I think it's just pass interference if I read it correctly. I could be wrong on that standpoint, but I'll read it again. Coaches will have the opportunity to challenge pass interference calls or non-calls outside of 2 minutes. So reading that, it sounds like it's just pass interference for now. I think this will adapt later on. So I'm thinking like, okay, so now, like I said, personal foul is probably the best one to have challenge as well. But, you know, you can also do like offsides or false starts or something of that nature as well. And maybe not, obviously not have every call be challenged, because then that will just be absolutely ridiculous. But at least have the most controversial, obviously, which is also not just pass interference, roughing the passer, and all those other ones. So I think this is the start of they're either going to overdo it and continue to have rules be reviewed, and it's going to go to a point where they might just have every reviewed, most calls reviewed, and go ridiculous, or they're going to have it very limited, and maybe this is the only one that's actually going to get. This is the only one they're going to get that's possible review. I'm thinking at most you should say pass interference, roughing the passer, personal foul calls. That's it. That's all I want, at least. And then we can... No, you don't need to do anything else because of the fact of the matter is you're looking overall at... Well, like look at the outcomes the games are going to be changing for the next season. It's going to be humongous. Astronomical, really. And that's what's going to be the most interesting is how these are going to go down. So with that being said, we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about Giannis versus Harden and their matchup they had yesterday and who really is the MVP of this season. And we'll talk about that when we return.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news, both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's gsmcpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Hello, welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. Just finished up with the talking about the NFL rule change of pass interference calls now being reviewable. But I got other word. Another thing is the Rams are not going to be re-signing Ndamukong Suh. They said they're ruling that completely out. So, wonder where he's going to go next is the question. So, with that being said, let's move on to just the NBA and MVP talk. Because obviously it's coming down to between Giannis and Harden. And with that being said, they had a game yesterday between each other. They both had a pretty solid game, I would say. I would say there's no complaints in how either of them did. I think they both did extremely well. And there it is. Okay. My stat sheet was, I couldn't read it for a second. But my left eye is all screwed up. Anyways, So what happened yesterday between the Bucks and the Rockets, obviously the Bucks won 108-94, which kind of people were like, oh, is Giannis the one? Well, Giannis had 19 points and 14 boards. He had a good game there. Harden had 23 points and 10 boards with 7 assists. He almost had a triple-double there. But when you're looking overall at the Rockets and just Harden's, like, let's compare those two stats. Let's compare Harden's stats to Giannis's stats. So, for this season, Harden has played 3 more games than Giannis, but for Giannis, he has 27 points a game, 12.6 boards a game, and 6 assists a game. That's a good season. That's a great season. What am I talking about? It's an amazing season. And then Harden has 36 points per game, which is just unreal, 6 rebounds a game, and 7.5 assists a game. So, it's difficult to say who has the better stats. Obviously, Giannis has more overall better stats. Maybe not. Obviously, he averages double-double a game. Harden does not. But Harden averages 36 a game. but it shows like who is really the guy that's carrying the team, you know, who has, well, I think it's like who has the worst team around him, I guess. And if you just look at yesterday's game, there was Eric Bledsoe at 23 points. That was the high for the Bucks. Chris Middleton is no slouch either. You have Brook Lopez who's playing well. You have George Hill coming off the bench. I mean, he's not playing his best, but he's still a solid bench player. And then you look at the Rockets. And, of course, Chris Paul, Clint Capella are two studs with the Rockets. So, honestly, they're both, like, you think about it, they're both neck and neck when it comes down to, like, talent-wise around them, Harden and Giannis-wise, in my opinion. But then, of course, you look at their records. Obviously, Houston is 47 wins to the Bucks 56. But then you might also take consideration of the toughness of schedule between the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference. So it's hard to say who's better. They're both extremely talented, no question about it. That there's no doubt there. But who's going to win the MVP? I just have this feeling it's going to be leading to James Harden. I think his 30-point streak that broke the record for most, like, second, or it was like the second most 30-point games in a row. And so with that being said, you're also looking at how consistently good he's been. And he's been consistently just absolutely dominant, James Harden is wise. He just puts the team on his back and just carries them. So it just seems like James Harden. But to me, if Giannis does win the MVP, I think it's going to be more along the lines of, people will be like, oh, well, Harden deserves it more. There'll be a lot of, like, complaining about it, I believe. But, I mean, Giannis has been playing extremely well also. So, honestly, to me, it's more along the lines of, like, both of them deserve it. But, obviously, it's like, it's not like the NFL where you get the NFC player, offensive player of the year and all that kind of stuff. We have multiple awards for multiple areas of play. But the question is, maybe not MVP, but who's going to go farther in the playoffs? And obviously the Rockets may have a tougher task ahead of them considering it's the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference. But man, I think the Bucks are just, it's either them, like I said they were going to go to the finals earlier this year, and I'm sticking by that statement because of the fact that's how good the Bucks are and just how consistently good they've been. And they've beaten some very good teams. Like, yeah, like I said, they just beat the Rockets handily. And I'm not sure if that proves anything to anybody else, but to me it's like that's a huge accomplishment. Just beating one of the top teams in the Western Conference is always a challenge. And I just feel like if anyone can give what people think are the eventual NBA final participants in the Golden State Warriors against having a challenge against them Eastern Conference-wise, definitely the Bucks, I feel like, can put up. And, of course, the Raptors can, too, and all those teams. The top teams in the Eastern Conference can more than handle their own, I think, against the Warriors. I think the Warriors, if they're going to win the NBA Finals, it's going to be in six games, if it's either against the Sixers, the Bucks, or the Raptors. If it was, like, against the Celtics or the Pacers, which I doubt will ever happen, they'll probably sweep them. Just this is a prediction, of course, but you're just looking overall at just Giannis's performances and Harden's performances. Yeah, Harden's winning MVP, but Giannis might get farther along in the playoffs and he might get the last laugh when he's in the finals. I'm not sure. And he was also interviewed about it saying, I don't give a gosh darn. I'm not saying the verbatim. I would love it if he actually said gosh darn on television. I think that'd be funny. But he just says, I don't give a gosh darn about the NBA MVP. It matters to me getting to the finals and winning a ring, which to me is like, I completely understand that. And then some people call Harden a stat, he's in it for the stats, he's in it for the MVP way, which if you watch him play, it kind of looks the way that way, to be completely honest. I get that, but I think everyone wants to win a championship. I think that's an obvious statement, but does that mean that people have no faith in in the Rockets with James Harden? Is he putting too much on himself? Is he, well, in a way, hogging the ball too much? I mean, when it comes to the playoffs, are they going to be able to do what they've been doing to win games? And that's basically rely on James Harden to get the job done. And, of course, there's Chris Paul and Clint Capela playing well, too. I get that. But they're going to have to really rely, if they're going to continue to play like this, can they rely on James Harden to continue to play like this in the playoffs? Because, obviously, playoff time, he's going to be covered big time by the best defensive player on on a playoff team. Whether whoever it is, it's going to be a challenge for him, I feel like. So, let's say Harden gets stopped. He can't do anything. He scores, let's say, 15 points. I know it's crazy to say that, but like 15 points and a couple assists. Who else can take over that game and help them win? Chris Paul, maybe. Like, he's still an injury-prone kind of guy, so he's a question in my mind. It just feels like that team's not deep enough, and they rely too much on James Harden to make a run. And I think, unfortunately, that's going to be the sad case of reality for the Houston Rockets. And, of course, it's like they were willing to trade, what, like 4 first-round draft picks for Jimmy Butler. I think that just showed that's how desperate they are for another kind of player to help Harden with the load, if you will. So, yeah. But then you look at the Bucks, the other MVP candidate, Giannis. That team's deep. Like I said, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, and that bench is no slouch either. I think that team has the ability to go far and deep into the playoffs. And I just don't – I can honestly see the Rockets losing in the first round. I don't see them making it to even the Western Conference Finals, to be completely honest with you. And it's just like I said before, I think they rely too much solely on James Harden to accomplish those type of things. And I think that's going to be the death of them in the long run. I think that's going to be where, like, everything they think they rely too much on their regular season ways of leaning on Harden throughout the entire season, that it's going to lead to a collapse, if you will. Because, like, God forbid, like, what if James Harden gets hurt and he's out for the playoffs? Like, I'm not wishing that, obviously, on him, but, like, what if? Use that in the scenario. Does that, like, are they even going to be winning a single game in the series in their first round game? I don't know. Like, that's how much I think they rely too much. It's almost relying too much, like, almost in a, like, it's just, you're relying too much on one guy. Not that I'm saying Harden can't handle it. Obviously, it's like, we'll see, like, he's been playing still extremely well, but it's like, you can't put it all on one guy. It's a team sport. 5 guys are on the court, not just one, you know? It just feels like it's going to lead to a point where their Rockets are thinking they can just lean on James Harden. He can get out of the jam for them, which he has done in the past. I'm not saying he hasn't. I'm not saying anything bad about James Harden. I'm just saying when it comes down to playoff time, why rely on one guy when you have 5 on the court? I think it's the best team overall that really wins the championship, and that's why the Warriors keep winning, because they don't just have Seth. They have Klay, who can go off, and Seth doesn't go off. They have Durant, if he can go off, if both of them don't go off. Like, they have multiple guys on the court that can go off at any time, and they're not relying on one guy. I think that's what puts them head and shoulders above the rest. Of course, that's what a super team is, of course. And that's obviously most likely going to be broken. That team's not going to be the same once Durant leaves. Maybe the same is a strong term, because they obviously had 73 wins without him. But I'm saying it more along the lines of, like, they have three MVP, or they have two MVPs and one of the three-point phenomenon in Klay Thompson and defensive prowess, a defensive guy in Draymond Green. Losing an MVP is going to put a hole in that team because you can't really rely on two MVPs anymore. But obviously they can handle themselves no problem. So we'll see how they end up without Harden. They're probably still going to be first in the West. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But regardless, I think it just relies on, like, can the Rockets rely on people to go off rather than Harden? And I don't think they can. I honestly do not think that is a logical thing that can happen. Well, maybe, okay, logical is not the right word. I think it's not a predictable thing. I'm not sure if it's a thing that can happen because of the fact they don't have guys that can do that. Chris Paul can, but, I mean, I'm having my doubts about him, to be completely honest, when it comes to his injuries and stuff like that, too. So it's just hard to really say, okay, this team's deep enough that one any guy can go off. No, that's really not the Rockets at all, actually. And that's just how I feel about it. So with that being said, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to finish up any other talks that need to be discussed regarding the world of sports. We'll be right back right after this.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA. From the UFC to extreme cage fighting, they got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
To the GSMC Sports Podcast. Just finished talking about Harden and Giannis and both those teams and what they're going to be like in the future and who's going to win an MVP and whatnot. Now we are moving on to other news. As the Raptors are very confident them keeping Kawhi. At the beginning of this season, it seemed like it was almost a foregone conclusion that Kawhi was going to play in California. Unknown where in California, because, I mean, He just said he wants to play in California. It just seems like he wants to play in California. Unknown what team he wants to be on, obviously. People say Clippers. Some say he'll join LeBron and the Lakers. Some say Golden State. Some say all these other. And, of course, Sacramento's in California, but who knows if they. I don't know how that'll work, to be honest. I think that's almost impossible. But it might work. I think it depends because he likes to be in a quiet area, and Sacramento's pretty darn quiet, so that'd be the only reason I think he would come to Sacramento. So, but regardless, moving on from that, it does look like that Kawhi is going to be staying in Toronto. They rest him a lot. They have a deep team around him. He's actually played less games than LeBron has, and that team is still one of the top teams in the East and in the NBA in general, because of how deep that team is and how, like, that team's just good all around great team. So no doubt about it that team is worth to stay for. Then you also look at, like, the contract for Toronto and Canada. Taxes are astronomically high, so that might be also an issue that must be thought about for Kawhi. But I guess we'll see where he goes. But it seems like they're fairly confident in this, in the sense of they will keep Kawhi and continue to be a contending team for years to come if they keep Kawhi. Because Kawhi's one of the... He can say Kawhi's top five player in the league without question. Honestly, if I had to make a top five off the top of my head, I would put Harden on it, put Giannis on it, put Kawhi on it. I would put LeBron on it, and I would put probably Durant on it. So, yeah. You know, I might even put Paul George in there over Durant at this moment because how well he's been playing. But I probably still keep Durant in the top five. Just shows how good he's been playing if he's on that. Like, only one Warrior on that list, and you could easily put three of them on the top five list, but that's how good everyone else is doing in the general sense. But we'll see how everything plays out when it comes down to it at the when the offseason begins, when AD is going to get traded and Kevin Durant's going to be a free agent and Kawhi, we don't know where he's going to end up and Kyrie Irving's going to be free. It's going to be a crazy offseason for sure. Definitely a big time offseason. We don't know who's going to go where. But anyways, moving on from that, I wanted to talk about contracts in Major League Baseball. Because obviously we've talked about Mike Trout and his $430 million contract. Is free agency getting too expensive? Like, usually you can trade a bunch of prospects and get some great players in there and be a contender, but the prices for a lot of these stars and a lot of these great players that are in baseball right now are so high. And like, when someone that thinks, oh, he's going to get a couple million dollars, then he ends up getting a $30 million contract, and that's kind of short, that's small compared to what people are asking for, like $150 million to $200 million and all that, and going up and up and up like that. It just feels like that we're going to a point where prospects and drafting is becoming more and more crucial in Major League Baseball than it ever has been. Because you can't really buy a team, a super team anymore, because it's so darn expensive. When one guy is worth over $400 million, like, you gotta have to shortchange a lot of other guys that you think can help your team win. So what does that mean for, like, I guess prospects are now worth a lot more than they ever have been. I think they're increasing tenfold in their stock, if you will. Because it's like, yeah, Manny Machado signed for $300 million. Well, now they have the number two prospect coming into the opening day roster. He's the number two prospect in baseball. He's going to be a huge, he needs to be a huge addition to complement Manny Machado, you know? It's got to be one of those things where you're looking at it and going, the younger players are going to be a lot less expensive, a lot cheaper, and they might be able to be just as good in the long run. And we don't have to worry about signing them to a massive $500 million contract, using just over exaggerating, of course, until like the next couple of, like six, 7 years, you know. Just, you don't have to, like, I think that's when it's going to be now. There's going to be a lot more prospects getting called up. There's going to be a lot more draft picks. They're going to be a lot more crucial in this situation. And I think these contracts are changing the game as we know it. I really do. And Mike Trout is just a start. You think $400 million is going to be the highest ever? No, that's only the beginning. It's the highest now, but I think it's only the beginning. We all, when Stanton signed that $327 million contract with the Marlins way back when, everyone was like, wow, that is unbelievably high. Well, we just saw it get added, add $103 million to that, and boom, you have now Mike Trout's contract. So does that mean that we'll see, like, oh wow, I can't believe we looked back on it and thought Mike Trout had a massive contract. Now guys are getting $500 million, you know, or now guys are getting $600 million. I don't think it's going to get up maybe that high, but I mean, it's not crazy to think it won't go to at least like I think $500 million for one player is not out of the question in the next couple of years. I really don't. I think soon we will get to that point of how fast we're getting to, how fast we got to $400 million. I think it's, bottom line is, I think it's going to get to a point where we're thinking of humongous contracts and how close these guys are coming to billionaires. Like, $500 million contract is not as absurd as it used to be. It's crazy to think it like that. And, of course, there's that old saying of the Yankees general manager back when they signed Babe Ruth in the 20s. I actually have the quote here. Let me just grab it real. Let me just find it real quick. I just had it. Yes. The Yankees general manager, Ed Barrow, at the time when Babe Ruth was signed, he signed a two-year, $160,000 contract. And he was quoted saying, no one will ever be paid more. Now, let's go, let's transfer that money to today's worth. So if we just do $150,000 from, let's quote, 1925, we can go a little higher than that. Well, let's, all right, fine. Let's do like 1930, $160,000 in 1930. $2.4 million. So Babe Ruth back in the day, basically in today's standards, signed a two-year, $2.4 million contract. And of course, the guy said no one, and then the general manager at Barrow said no one will be paid higher. Well, someone got paid much higher, to a point where I won't be surprised if Mike Trout ends up with a billion dollars by the end of his career due to sponsorships as well. And isn't that amazing how we've come from Babe Ruth, arguably the greatest player of all time. He's considered up there by many people. Got $160,000, and Mike Trout just got an extension of $430 million. That is, I can't even comprehend how, like, can you imagine what his agent said or Mike Trout's first reaction to, like, okay, we're going to give you a $430 million extension. You got to play here for the rest of your career. I don't think there was any hesitant response to that. Unless it was, what was it, $430 million, like him just going, like, just having almost a seizure of excitement, you know? And it's truly amazing to look at all this and think of it like that. I love just looking back on stuff like that and going, wow, man, has the world evolved around, or are experiencing an evolution in baseball and in sports in general based on these contracts that obviously people think they're getting overpaid. And you can absolutely argue the fact that, wow, a baseball player is getting paid $430 million while a teacher is getting paid pennies on the dollar type of thing. I understand the controversies there. But obviously with this contract Mike Trout got, baseball has changed forever. Sports in general have changed forever because no longer can you lowball someone with a $50 million contract, in baseball at least. That's a MVP of the season, you know? It's getting to a point where if you win a league MVP, NL or AL MVP, or a Cy Young, or whatever, how have you? You know what I mean. Then we're going to a point where it's going to get more and more absurd to afford these players, and there's going to be one team that will empty their pocketbooks for a certain player if one team isn't able to pay that player what he thinks he has earns because of what Mike Trout has. But that is how I see these things, and I think you guys do too when it comes down to it in the long run. And, you know, maybe this will change facts. And it's just amazing to think, like, wow, that guy got a $50 million or a $40 million contract or an $80 million contract in football. And then you see a $430 million in baseball. And yet football's more popular and just all these other things and blah, blah, blah. But obviously, I'm still standing by what I said. We will not be the same. Not look at sports the same because of these contracts. But that is our show for the day. Thank you so much for joining me. And today we're also doing baseball podcasts to further talk more about the contracts and the history and like the worst contracts, as well as just how the season looks in general, and also our basketball podcast as we're getting closer to the NBA playoffs. And the Sweet 16 is also tomorrow, which is exciting. But as always, I'm Jeff Malinoff, and I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.